Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court. I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights, but the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And to that extent, as radical as I think people tried to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical.
Well, there it is. That's B.O., Barack Hussein Obama, stripped bare of his public persona, the real Barack Hussein Obama, who has not yet denied that he said this because he can't. It's an interview from WBEZ from 2001 when he was who he is, which is a radical left-wing college professor who espouses communism, who is saying that the U.S. Constitution itself reflects a blind spot of the founding fathers. Now, he is an arrogant kid, Barack Hussein Obama, who was given everything through affirmative action and the sacrifices of his white grandmother, who has a nerve to say that he knows more than the founding fathers of the United States of America. And the miracle here, the miracle for you left-wing communists, is that you are almost about to take over a country. This has been your dream for well over 50 years. And you are on the precipice of taking over the reins of the United States of America through sheer genius and through the sheer failure of the Republican Party to offer an alternative. I want to read you an email on the Savage Nation that I received from a listener who will remain anonymous, because this represents the gestalt of my audience. When I said to one of my listeners in an email that the question will become whether or not the wealthy wing of the Democrat Party, i.e. Pelosi and that gang, can control the communist wing of the Democrat Party after the communist wing wins, here is what this listener sent back. The listener wrote, "The wealthy wing of the Democrat Party will lose. Clinton lost. It is over. Barney Frank is a maniac like him. And how many more right behind him? Gays, lesbians, and Black Panthers united to take down the system. Now add in tens of millions of new poor immigrants who want everything free to get even with the evil white male. You will have drugs legalized, prostitution legalized, borders torn open, homosexuals in the military, free speech gone, hate crimes laws, higher taxes, guns seized, youth continuing to be drugged, free everything for everyone, you name it, all coming and coming literally in the next 4 years if Barack Hussein Obama wins. The imprisonment of political opponents like in Venezuela will not occur yet, not with the current Supreme Court. McCain is an old man who cannot speak about any of this. The losers who write for the newspapers and work on television are pushing Obama even as their own businesses burn to the ground in failure. They do not care. They do not care. They do not care. This is all sad and all true. Obama is so dangerous," writes the listener, "and the white liberals are the exact types that will put him in office. The 10% of swing whites that should be voting for McCain but are guilty, drugged out, will be putting their grandchildren into economic and social slavery. And all the white male gays who hate themselves and who will vote for a black man that hates white people. It is so depressing." Now, that's the story that I'm getting. Obama is not a socialist. This is the problem. I was the first one in the major media to start talking about socialism when they were still up to liberalism. Remember, I wrote the book. I wrote the book Liberalism is a Mental Disorder years ago. And then soon thereafter, many people, you know, caught it, and they were into the whole liberal, and it started to lose its meaning. I had to redefine for you and my audience what we were talking about. We're not talking about liberals. We're talking about socialists. There's a whole spectrum of left of the left wing, just as there's an entire spectrum of the right wing. I am a moderate conservative, but I've been painted as an extremist by the scum on the left. The fact of the matter is, when I began in radio in 1994, in the first week on radio, I said pointedly that there must be a firewall between conservatism and extreme racism on the right. And I've never crossed that firewall. There is a firewall on the left wing as well that has been breached. That firewall has been breached by the communist wing of the Democrat Party, whose leader is Barack Hussein Obama. Obama is unartful at hiding his true beliefs that you don't even know the danger you are in. As I walk around, as I ride around, as I talk around, and as I look around, I see drugged up lunatics, mainly white people, who don't even know the danger they are in. They have no idea the danger they're in. They have no idea what their children's lives are going to become like in a new communist America. The United Soviet States of America. The United Soviet States of America. The United Soviet States of America. The problem here is that we have a perfect storm that has occurred. And the little ship of state is facing a tidal wave that I do not think it can climb. You have an old man at the helm of the ship of state called McCain. And God bless this old Navy pilot. God bless him. He's gunning his engines as fast as he can. But the little ship of freedom cannot climb that wave of socialism that is about to turn that boat upside down. That is what I said. And the problem is the perfect political storm. Now, what is this perfect political storm? A charismatic communist, Barack Obama. A complicit media, the socialist media. And a Republican candidate who just can't get into third gear. The problem is because the Republicans chose to pull Romney out of the driver's seat. They did it, make no mistake about it. There's no question that if it was Romney versus Obama at this point, Romney would be ahead 10 to 15 points. Romney is a self-made businessman, telegenic, great family, great story, could pull the country out of the recession. At least people would go for him rather than this big-eared Marxist from Chicago who espouses naked communism and gets away with it because the media is on his side. But the reason the Republican bigwigs pulled Romney out of the line of fire is because they sacked the Treasury. They took their balloon payments. They busted out the sporting goods store called the U.S. Treasury. And they understood that they're going to throw this busted economy into the hands of the next president. They certainly don't want to take the fall for what they've done. And so they said to Romney, pull out, let the old man take the flak, let him take the heat, and he'll lose. He'll lose. Obama will win. He'll overreach. The country will react to the redistribution of wealth. They'll react to all of the social extremism that is coming under Obama, and they'll be clamoring in 4 short years for a Republican again, and that will be you, Mr. Romney. So they're in essence putting Romney on the bench for the next election. That's Michael Savage's interpretation of the third part of the perfect storm that is going to launch the first communist revolution in the United States of America. That's one man's opinion. That is one man's opinion. What is your opinion? The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I'll have this and many other stories on the Savage Nation. Be here. Savage.
One of the, the tragedies of the civil rights movement was because the civil rights movement became so court-focused, I think that there was a tendency to lose track of the political and community organizing and activities on the ground that are able to put together the actual coalitions of power through which you bring about redistributive change.
Right, and you have street gangs to enforce that redistributive change. Hitler had that through the SA. And, of course, here they will be the Earth Police, armed, of course, and dangerous, of course. But instead of shooting you outright, they'll say, sir, please come with me. Madam, please come with me. It will be a nice sort of fascism. It will be a sensitive sort of fascism that we all fear. Chicago, Illinois, Akbar, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Savage. Wanted to tell you, first of all, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and I thoroughly enjoy listening to you. Though I do disagree with you on a lot of points, but I enjoy listening to you. I enjoy the Bronx accent. I'm from the Bronx myself. But you know, sticking to the topic, you guys seem to be very petrified of the idea that Barack Obama is going to be president of the United States in a few, you know, about a week now. And I'm a big supporter of Obama. I wasn't a supporter of any president before he began to run, and he kind of, you know, just kind of came on the scene. But like myself, a lot of people were ready for a change, and Obama represents a change in a positive direction. And
well, we know he represents a change, but taking from those who have and giving it to those who do not against their will is against the American system. Now, of course, if you want to live in Venezuela or Cuba, that's what you're going to have. And I think that if I were a have-not, I might be in favor of a communist takeover as well. You understand, though, that it's a change in the direction of this country forever. And that although today you may think you're going to benefit from it, in the long run, no one benefits from a tyrannical system because you will also lose. You don't understand that yet.
But, I mean, as opposed to taking from the poor and giving to the rich, which is what, you know, the rich get the breaks and the poor, we pretty much suffer. So Obama is proposing to do the opposite.
Well, I understand. It's a perfect storm. You have the Bush gangsters who melted down Wall Street. You have a Republican campaigner who's not really running a very good campaign. And then you have a charismatic Obama who's hiding his Marxist roots and philosophies. But make no mistake about it, no man benefits from a totalitarian system. A man like you, Akbar, might cheer the arrival of an Obama, but in short time, you will find out that your life is also constrained by the new socialist/communist system. You will not have freedom of speech. If at any point you were to say, wait a minute, that's wrong, you would be pointed out by your neighbors. You might disappear and go into a work camp. This is what has gone on in the Soviet Union. It's gone on in Castro's Cuba. It went on in Pol Pot's Cambodia. And you say, that's too far-fetched. It can't happen here. Well, I would say that if Obama could get this far, even though he's a naked Marxist, it could happen here, Akbar. You're not alone, though. You're not alone in that millions of white liberals who themselves have money are literally throwing themselves at the feet of this man, digging their own graves, but they don't understand it. Thanks for the call. I saw an interesting bumper sticker in Marin County, California, that should have been given out a month ago, but unfortunately the McCain campaign is inept. And it said very simply, liberty versus slavery. No, liberty versus socialism. McCain versus Obama. That's it. That's the whole story. Liberty versus socialism. That's it. That's the whole story. You know, Obama himself is probably a nice person. I want to reiterate that. I've studied this carefully. I think I can read people. I don't think there's a mean bone in this guy's body. He's ambitious. He's ruthless, but not a murderer, not a killer, not a vicious guy. But I want to remind you that Pol Pot was a professor in Cambodia, just a mild-mannered professor along the lines of Obama, who went to Paris to the Sorbonne, and he was infected with the Marxist dialogue, the doctrine of Karl Marx. He studied Marxism. He became a student of Marxism in Paris. Pol Pot. And then he went back to his country called Cambodia. And he himself didn't kill anybody, of course. The intellectuals never do. But he hired gangs of young students who wore red scarves called the Khmer Rouge. And these red-scarved youth brigades in Cambodia started to take off the streets anyone who wore glasses. Anyone who wore eyeglasses was considered a counter-revolutionary. Teachers, doctors, lawyers, social workers, accountants, web designers. If you wore glasses, the idiotic 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old AK-47 carrying youth of Cambodia saw you as a potential to overthrow the communist regime of Pol Pot. They at first put you into a work camp, and that resulted in a mountain of human skulls, 2 million estimated, in a country of, I don't think there were more than 15 million. 2 million of the population were killed by the Khmer Rouge, and not one of them was killed by the nice intellectual Pol Pot. No, you see, it's not Obama who you have to fear. It is the killers around him. That's what's coming. Now, the fact of the matter is, it's not over yet. Even this inept old man, McCain, could win. And I have heard from enough people to say to you, for example, I went into a sushi place in San Francisco last week, takeout, and the couple, I believe, are from the Philippines. And I think they're diehard Republicans. I don't really know. They're just like me in the show. And they said to me, well, what do you think? Who's going to win? I said, I don't know. It's pretty bad. Looks pretty bad. It looks like Obama's ahead. He said to me, well, remember, Bush was down 14 points 2 weeks before the election in 2004. I said, yeah, that's true. Republicans and conservatives tend not to answer pollsters, while liberals are the pollsters, and liberals love polls, and that's a possibility. Well, another person whose brain I admire, who's pretty acute and clever, said to me that she thinks that Obama will lose. And I said, well, why do you say that? And she said, because the cracker is going to come out of the woodwork and vote in numbers unimagined. They see what's on the horizon. They see ACORN registering the dead felons and goldfish. They understand that their freedom and their future is at stake. And make no mistake about it, this is a demographic question right now. And whether you know it or not, most of you who listen to the show live in the porn belt. You live in coastal cities, which demographically is not Caucasian. And so you think the whole world is like you, but you're wrong. The world of America is approximately 67% of European descent. That is, if you want to put it that way, white. And whether you know it or not, most of the people do not want to elect a communist who will take away their freedoms and their property. That's how they see it. Or if you want to go a step further, you might say they're racists and they don't want a black man. You could say anything you want. But the fact of the matter is, the white people are still a majority in this country.
Savage.
It is a savage nation. We have a we're on the verge of America's embrace of socialism / communism if Obama should win. This country has never yet experimented with that sort of government. It almost came close in some at some points in its history, but never openly did we have such a socialist communist candidate. But never before have we also had such a complicit media that is 99% socialist, communist in their orientation for various reasons. A lot of it has to do with sexual orientation, and I'm not pulling your leg. I'm just astounded at how many sexually oriented people who are not, let us say, heterosexual, are in favor of a dictatorship because they think the dictatorship will be in their favor. But I'm going to leave that for another time. If you look at the entire spectrum of the left, it ranges all over the map, from the liberal to the murderous communist. And you have to ask yourself, where does Obama fit on that scale of left wing, of the left wing? As I say, think of it from 0 to 100. And the most extremist end of the wing of a left-winger would be Hitler or Stalin. I know you think that they were different, but you're wrong. Hitler was a socialist, national socialist, N-A-Z-I, National Socialist Party. The liberals are very smart. They brainwashed you into thinking Hitler was a right-winger. He was a left-winger. Stalin was a left-winger. They were two left-wing dictators. They were two socialist dictators of the 20th century fighting for world domination, okay? They were not right-wing by any means whatsoever. They both hated religion. They both tried to destroy the religions within their own country. So they were left-wingers, and they would be on the extreme end. Now, you can all go all the way down the list to the liberals you have known. Where does Obama fit? You think he's a mild liberal? Well, you listen to what he said in the speeches that were found over the weekend, and you have to say, well, did he outgrow it? If he outgrew it, how come he hasn't said he outgrew it? He says that one of the tragedies of the civil rights movement was that the courts did not move for redistributive change. He also said in a Chicago Public Radio speech from 2001, he said that our Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, reflects a blind spot of the founding fathers. It's a flaw of the country that continues to this day. Here is an arrogant child raised by a white grandmother after being ditched by his mother and his two Muslim fathers. You want the naked truth? I'm giving it to you. Okay, you want to hear reality? There's your reality. The guy is ditched by both of his fathers and by his mother. His white grandmother sacrifices for him. She worked for the Bank of Hawaii, by the way. He is sent to the finest of schools on scholarships because he met all the criteria of being a person of color. He used affirmative action to get into Ponoho, probably on a full scholarship. He then went to Yale. He will not release his college records because it is suspected he was registered as a foreign student. His birth certificate has been sealed by the so-called Republican governor of Hawaii, Miss Lingle. Now, why would she seal his birth certificate? See, she's in on something here. New York City, Jimmy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I think you're 100% right about Obama. Look, people don't understand. In the Nazi Germany, you had like a 17-year-old Nazi soldier guarding a toilet, okay? He had nothing to do with the Holocaust, but it was the totality of the whole Nazi regime and the entire military. It took all of that for the death camps to be operated. And remember, some of these people from the Weather Underground talked about killing 10% of Americans who will not be able to conform.
Correct. I've seen the YouTube video of Bill Ayers and his friends talking about exterminating 25 million capitalists who will not go along with the program.
Right. And that's the type of people that will be around Obama. Obama was surrounded with these people his entire life. To me, it's as clear as day. I've been studying.
All right, so let's pause for a minute. Let's not get hysterical. He did not get here on his own. He did not get here through these Weather Underground types. He got here because moneyed interests want him in power. Nancy Pelosi is amongst the wealthiest women in Congress. Dianne Feinstein, one of the wealthiest women on earth. Do you think they'll be able to control Obama's Marxist tendencies?
Do I think that if you want to get the power, you have to placate various forces out there. So you have to get the masses to support you. Therefore, you push help for the poor. At the same time, you have to throw something to the rich. Hitler did the same thing. He helped the business interest in Germany. At the same time, he was claiming to help the masses who were vulnerable to a communist takeover. So,
right. In other words, I know that the industrialists in Germany, mainly the Krupps, backed Hitler in the beginning, saying this young man is charismatic. He speaks well. He electrifies crowds. He stands for change. Let's back this young guy, Hitler. He has extremist language, but we'll control him once he's in. Now, we know history proved that they couldn't control him once he was in. Is that what you think is going to happen with Obama?
That's what it appears like. Now, remember, people had a legitimate fear in Germany because in Ukraine, the communists murdered 10 million people from 1932 to 33. So Hitler was able to tell the people in Germany, you join me and we'll kill them before they kill us. So he was able to exploit a real legitimate problem the same way Obama.
Right. And in Germany, to be fair to the discussion, in the early in the late 20s and 30s, the communist mobs, meaning the Bill Ayers of their time, were going around beating people up, breaking store windows and killing people. The communist gangs were loose in the streets of Germany and the people craved order. Isn't that true?
That's true, and the communists also were strong. The Soviet press at the time called it popular front governments in France, Spain, and Italy. So if those countries had continued to be held by communists, they would have eventually consolidated their gains and had total control. See, they don't have total control here. It's going to take time to do it. But it's like a ratchet works. It only works in one direction. So let's say Obama gets in and appoints a Marxist, a radical left Supreme Court. There'll be people throughout the CIA and FBI, all our schools. Even if he gets voted out of office, we'll be further and further to the left. And it almost seems to be irreversible the way it works.
Mm-hmm. But you agree with me that he himself is not a murderous, evil man.
Well, that we don't know. I personally think he's evil, whether he could personally strike. And there are people, remember Waco, remember Ruby Ridge, there are people in our government who will follow orders. and do things that they shouldn't do.
We don't have to remember Ruby Ridge. Remember Texas of last year when the Texas Rangers went in with machine guns and armored personnel carriers to remove babies from the arms of their mothers because they didn't like their religion.
But they were only following orders, is what I'm saying.
That's correct. Right. All the brave white men of Texas were only following orders. I remember that. It was a terrible precedent in America. All right, Jimmy, thanks for the call. Now, I want to go to another topic, and I want to lead back to politics for a moment. I'm a trained scientist, and I'm very observant, and I have been all my life. I used to watch ants when I was a child with a little magnifying glass. I'd like to watch ants march in a line. I used to like to watch them walk on a sidewalk. I used to take a rose and look inside the rose. I would take watches apart. I've always liked to deconstruct things, if you want to put it in modern vernacular. And over the weekend, I deconstructed a loaf of bread for you. And I was shocked to find out that one of the ingredients being used in bread in the United States of America today is an additive I had never heard of called ADA, azo dicarbonamide. I said, what the heck is this? The bread has enriched bleached white flour. I know about that. Folic acid, L-cysteine, enzymes, ascorbic acid. That's all. There's all vitamins. And then I see azo dicarbonamide, ADA. I said, I've never heard of that. When did they start introducing this to breads, ADA? So I go research this ingredient that's now being added to bread, really an additive, and I'm shocked to learn the following. This is what's happened under George Bush. And this may be responsible. Watch how I take it back to politics. You know there's an asthma outbreak in America, they say, right? Listen to this. It's used as a food additive, as a flour bleaching agent, an improving agent. Okay? The use of, I think it's ADA, the use of ADA, azo dicarbonamide in bread, as a food additive, is banned in Australia and in Europe. Now listen to this. In Singapore, the use of ADA in bread can result in up to 15 years imprisonment and a fine of $450,000. Yet George Bush permits the use of ADA in breads in America. You say, how could this be going on? Because lobbyists from the flour industry gave enough money to the Republicans to eliminate FDA laws, which would have prohibited the use of such an additive years ago. So you say, well, big deal. Oh, yeah, big deal? Listen to this. In the United Kingdom, the Health and Safety Executive has identified ADA as a respiratory sensitizer, a possible cause of asthma. And it also said, here it comes now for those of you who have children with asthma, ADA may cause an allergic reaction in those sensitive to other AZO compounds such as food dyes. So in other words, if your child's taking in food dyes and they're eating bread with ADA in it, they could have an allergic reaction. It says the consumption of this food additive, ADA, may also heighten an allergic reaction to other ingredients in a food, yet we permit it in America in breads and pastries. Well, the shocking part here is that if this additive is found in Singapore, the use of it can result in up to 15 years imprisonment. It is banned in Europe. It is banned in Australia. It is used in flour to make the flour change somehow as a flour kind of, I guess it makes the flour rise and preserves it longer. Listen to what I just said to you. Now, why am I bringing up a food additive on the show today? Because I'm a keen observer. I'm a trained observer. And I can see contaminants when they appear. And I have fought against contaminants all of my adult life. I have fought against the drugging of our children all of my life, my adult life. I have fought against the misdiagnosis of adults and the drugging of our adult population all of my adult life. And I am telling you that Barack Hussein Obama is an anomaly. He is a dangerous additive to the American bread politic. This man is a danger to the survival of this country. Now, why do I say it? Is he himself dangerous? Yeah, he is very dangerous. He surrounded himself with radicals who wanted to take over the government. They killed police. Some of them went to jail for killing police. Some of them went to prison for sending guns to kill police. Some of them said they'd like to kill 25 million capitalists who will not change to socialists. He is a certifiable socialist of probably the most extreme variety, bordering, if not outright, on the communist. He himself is so egomaniacal because he has never had anyone say no to him, because he's always been the promised one, the multiracial child who white people bow down to out of the liberal syndrome that we've seen over the last 30 years. Of any person of color, they cater to, they bow down to. You know what the white liberals are about. It's nauseating. If I were a man of color, I'd spit in their face, frankly, whether I agree with them or not, because they're pandering to the people. So you get a guy like Obama who's a white guy. Is he a black guy? Is he a white guy? They don't know, but he's multiracial, and he has an exotic name. So through his entire youth, the people cater to him because they don't want to be seen as racist, so they're oversensitive to him. So he's not had any real challenges to his statements, to his philosophies. Now you take this intelligent young man and you put him into the worst of schools, that would be Yale, where his brain is washed by communist professors, and he comes up with a statement that an enormous blind spot of the founding fathers of America is the Constitution itself. And the Constitution reflects the fundamental flaw of this country and continues to this day. And this man is now on the precipice of becoming the president of the United States of America, a man who thinks the Constitution needs to be changed. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think that although you can craft theoretical justifications for it legally, I think you can, any of us sitting here could come up with a rationale for bringing about economic change through the courts.
That's your friend Barack Hussein Obama, naked communist. Listen to clip one again. I want you to hear him talking about redistribution of wealth and saying that the civil rights era, well, we'll play it in the next hour. The civil rights era wasn't that radical. The Warren Court wasn't that radical because it didn't address redistribution of wealth. Marx, Castro, Pol Pot, Stalin, you name it. We have a naked Marxist running for office, in my opinion. Florida, Damon, you disagree? Go ahead, please. What would you call redistribution of wealth talk, if not Marxism?
I'd like to make a statement regarding...
Well, no, I don't want a statement. I'm asking a question. You say Obama's not a Marxist. If he is talking about redistributing wealth and changing the Constitution, how would you define that?
Hello?
Don't you hear what I'm saying? Can you not hear me, or can you?
Yes, I can hear you now. I'm sorry.
Start again. You say that Obama's not a Marxist. I have very little time. If a man is talking about redistributing wealth and that the Constitution needs to be changed, how would you define that? Is that not Marxism?
Well, first of all, he didn't say that he was going to change the Constitution. And the clip that you're playing is conveniently editing the whole statement. The redistribution of wealth in context of what he's saying in terms of the civil rights movement is about fairness for those whom the civil rights movement was speaking on behalf, and that's African Americans.
Wait. You mean we haven't had fairness yet with all these years of affirmative action, all these years of giving jobs to people who didn't make the same grade as white people? Hasn't that been redistribution of wealth?
No, and there has never been.
Well, what do you mean no? What do you mean by no? Everybody in a police department, everybody in a fire department, everybody in a union understands that people have been advanced to score lower than them on tests. If that's not been wealth redistribution, I'd like to know what is.
No, it's not. And the reality is...
How can you say it's not? When you give a man a job that he didn't make on his own, he didn't make the same grade as the other guy. What would you call that?
Well, here's the thing, is that African-Americans are not always hired. And the reality is that corporations would rather hire a white male American with a criminal background than an African.
See, now you're twisting. You're not even listening to your own voice. You won't answer a simple question. I'm alleging that affirmative action has been socialism for 30 years. That we have already had wealth redistribution through affirmative action. Any white man who is qualified and denied a job to give it to a non-white man or a lesbian or a gay is suffering at the hands of redistribution of wealth.
No, and it is not.
Well, that's the end of the story, because you don't know what you're talking about. Just because you say no doesn't make it no. And when I say yes and I tell you why it's yes and you can't answer it, that means I'm right and you're wrong. It's as simple as that. And I want to give out a few copies of Psychological Nudity. I have about 4,500 copies left, and if they're selling at a rate where I think they'll be gone by the end of November, or by about Thanksgiving, this first printing, first edition is going to be gone. And I suggest you buy them now while you can. I don't know that I'm going to reprint them. I may or may not, but I don't want to talk about it much longer, so I suggest that you call the show, and if you have got a favorite story to talk about, we'll give you a free copy. I want to talk strictly about liberty versus socialism, about freedom versus the state taking what is yours and giving it to those who did not earn it. I want to talk about the double standard that is already operational in America. In West Hollywood, two gay men put up a picture, a mannequin, of Sarah Palin hanging by a noose. A mannequin hanging by a noose. A noose around Sarah Palin's neck. The gays are giggling. They think it's just tee-hee-hee. I'm asking you a question, and this is a horrible question for me to have to ask because I would never do it. What do you think would happen if someone put up a mannequin of B.O. hanging from a noose? Tell me what would happen in this country. And I thought, by the way, that threatening a public candidate for the presidency or the vice presidency with such a death figure is a crime that the Secret Service investigates. But it seems to me that certain types in West Hollywood think it's all a darn joke. And I am fed up with this double standard. I would like to see that snot-nosed punk in West Hollywood arrested by the Secret Service. That is not free speech. That is a death threat. That symbolizes the death of Sarah Palin. It doesn't matter whether you like Sarah Palin or not. What matters is that these snits think that anything they can do is funny. They remind me of these freak bicycle riders here in the West Coast. I don't know if you have them around the country. I am so fed up with these creepy children who think that everything is an iPhone and a joke, who take over two-lane roads and put their ugly butts in your face, and when you honk the horn, they say, "Hey, you must be kidding." No, I'm not kidding. And I'd like to know why the highway patrol doesn't put them in jail. I'd like to know why the local police don't seize their bicycles. You see, I'm a bicycle rider, but I keep to the right. And I hate people who take over a whole lane because I know they brought their bicycle out to that country road on the back of an SUV, and they're just a bunch of snotty punks from San Francisco dominating the local roads with their disgusting mentality. They think the world is a joke and an iPhone. It is not a joke, and it's not an iPhone. Just wait till an illegal on a drunk hits them.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court. I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights, but the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And
all right, we got it. He's a naked Marxist, the first one in American history who has gotten this far. Make no mistake about it. We have socialists in Congress right now. Bernie Sanders from Vermont is a socialist. He's an overt socialist. And we have socialist wobblies in the U.S. Senate and the Congress who, you know, never come out and say it. None of them will say it. The fact of the matter is his rhetoric says it for him. Now, when I coined the phrase 2 weeks ago, trickle-up poverty, it was a clever derivative of redistribution of wealth, because that's what we're talking about. Now, you may say, well, what's wrong with taking from the rich and giving to the poor? How about everything? Everything is wrong with it for the following reason. Now, let me define my terms. If you said to me, take from the rich and give to the poor, I'd have you define the rich. Then I have to subdefine the rich, those who stole their money and those who earned their money. For example, the president of Lehman Brothers, who I saw before Congress about 4 weeks ago, should not only have his wealth redistributed, he should be put in prison, in my opinion, for having destroyed the company and robbed the shareholders blind. That's not redistribution of wealth. That's called justice. And we're all for that. But let's not confuse the robber barons of today with people who create jobs through hard work. And that's the problem. We have a perfect storm that has brewed between the excesses of the Bush administration in the form of the Lehman Brothers CEO, in form of the Morgan Stanley CEO, in my opinion, in the form of the Treasury Secretary himself, who is operating almost along the lines of a Don Corleone. Yeah, we have real problems here with robber barons robbing the Treasury. Nobody's against seeing justice done to them. And nobody's opposing seeing them go to prison if they can be proven they committed a crime and having their assets seized. That is not redistribution of wealth. Redistributing wealth is something quite different. There was an article from the Charleston Watch, out of Charleston, South Carolina, I guess, by Lee Walton. And it's called Shrimp and Grits, Income Redistribution, a Fulfilling Experiment When Personally Applied. And I can't read the whole thing, but he's walking down the street in his town and he sees a bum with a sign that says, Vote Obama, I need the money. Then he goes to a restaurant. He has lunch. And the waiter has an Obama pin on him. So after he finishes lunch, he says he's not going to give the $10 tip to the waiter. He said that when the check finally came, I decided not to tip my waiter and explained to him that I was going to implement the practical application of Obama's redistribution of wealth concept as my own personal socialistic experiment. He stood there in stoic disbelief as I explained to him that I was going to redistribute his rightfully earned $10 tip to someone who I deem more indeed need, a homeless fellow standing a few blocks north in front of the restaurant. The waiter stammered a few, but why practice on me? I'm just a local college student. And then angrily stormed away from the table in a steaming huff of progressive, self-righteous indignation. Apparently, after experiencing firsthand the application of such socialistic governance from the perspective of the rightful wage earner, my young liberal-minded waiter was quickly convinced that income redistribution was much easier to support as a noble, magnanimous social policy than when his own hard-earned income was about to be redistributed against his will to another I deem more needy. So he went outside, he gives the homeless guy a $10 bill, and he says, go to the restaurant and thank the waiter there who was wearing the Obama OA tie, because I decided that you, the homeless guy, could use the money more than my waiter who had actually earned the $10. He said the homeless guy smiles in grateful disbelief, tossed his sign in the hedge, and promptly bounded for the liquor store across the street. And then he goes home and he says, I began thinking about the heavy burden of corporate ownership because he wants to redistribute wealth. And he started to think about this whole concept. So he says, I began thinking about the heavy burden of corporate ownership and the endless frustration from beating my head against the wall of increasing bureaucracy year after year. I also thought of the majority of this year's hard-earned profits that I had planned to reinvest in a few new employees, annual raises to reward loyalty and hard work, Christmas bonuses for extraordinary effort, and year-end corporate donations to the Aquarium, Coastal Conservation League, and the Historic Charleston Foundation. After reconsidering my apparent politically incorrect capitalistic beliefs, the needs of my hard-working, albeit financially struggling middle-class staff, and the six-figure salaries of three nonprofits directors sitting in the big, stately, well-maintained buildings that each called home, I decided then and there to give every last penny of this year's profit directly to Charleston's homeless shelter, lay off all my staff, close our company, retire early, and depend upon the largesse of Obama's promised redistribution of wealth for my every need. In that brief instance, I too became a practicing socialist. It's by Lee Walton, Shrimp and Grits. It should be up on michaelsavage.com. Now, you may say it is satire. Guess what? It's satire now, but there are millions of gentlemen and ladies like him who will sell their businesses, they will stop working, and they will let the government take care of you, and millions of jobs will be lost because people are not going to take the trouble to invest their money and take risks to build businesses. Now, this is hard for you people who don't have a business, who are working for a business or a government, to understand. But the engine of our civilization, meaning our society rather, the engine of our society is the small business. Small businesses are not given to anyone. They are created through an idea and through guts and through savings and through extremely hard work. Now, who in the world is going to take all this time and take all this risk in a socialist economy? What's going to happen is you're going to have a meltdown of our economy if we elect a socialist to the presidency. Do you understand that? San Diego, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm calling in response to your book. I just love it. The morals of the stories go much deeper once it's read the second time, particularly the first story about not discarding something immediately and actually fixing something and reusing it in our society nowadays of how we purchase items and throw them away.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about the electric blue saddle-stitched pants, story number one in Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories. And I want to thank you for that. Stay on the line, Mike, because I'm sending you a free Christmas gift, an early Christmas gift for you to give to your favorite socialist friend in San Diego, a copy of Psychological Nudity. And so let me say this. Yeah, everybody pretends to have grown up frugal and poor, like Al Gore showed pictures of him and Tipper in a trailer, which is just a scream. Obama claims to have been poor, but he, unlike me, benefited from affirmative action while I suffered from affirmative action. You see, Obama and I are on the opposite sides of the political spectrum, as you can well imagine. While he benefited from affirmative action, stepping over more qualified white men, I actually lost as a result of affirmative action many times in my life. Although I'd get near hundreds on certain exams, they put me at the back of the bus because they said, the ACLU said, certain people will have to put their futures on hold in order to let others advance. And take a look at where we are today. We have America's first affirmative action candidate about to become president. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and now a proverb from the Bible. This is Proverbs 15, two lines. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The ruin of the poor is their poverty, which is a very interesting proverb from the Bible. The ruin of the poor is their poverty. What the poor people don't understand is that by electing a socialist, they're going to become poorer, not richer. And that's almost impossible to explain to people who are poor. They believe the rhetoric of the demagogue. They have no idea that the only reason they have anything at all is because of the rich, i.e. the people who've created all of the edifices of civilization. Everything they benefit and enjoy, whether it be the hospital or the schoolhouse, is a result of the work of the wealthy in this country, the donations, the businesses themselves, through their taxes, etc. What they don't realize, the poor, is that by the ruin of the poor is their poverty. By letting their poverty dictate their vote, they're going to wind up poorer. You understand this? You do and you don't. I remember writing this when I was 18. Those who know will always know, and those who don't will never. And it's still true. It is still true. There are fabulous articles on my website, michaelsavage.com. I don't know where to begin. I'd rather you just read it yourself. The noose picture of Palin is a shocker because this guy in West Hollywood should be arrested by the Secret Service for threatening Sarah Palin's life. Now, why do I say it? Why do I say it? You cannot hang an effigy of a political figure without saying that it's going to trigger someone who's liable to do that. This guy in West Hollywood who thinks everything is a joke and an iPod should be arrested by the Secret Service, but he won't be because it's Sarah Palin hanging from a noose. But I'd like you to reverse it and see what you think. The shocking Obama tapes that were released over the weekend are truly shocking, where he discusses the failure of the Supreme Court to rule on redistributing wealth. He talks about the blind spot of the founding fathers and that the U.S. Constitution itself needs to be rewritten. Now, if that doesn't tell you what you're in for, I understand why. And that leads to the next story. My headline is, newspapers in free fall, they still print Sunday comics. As I rode around my neighborhood on Sunday, I look at everything. So I look in driveways, and I was shocked. No, I was walking Teddy, I remember, very early in the morning, around 7 o'clock for me. That's very early. And people weren't up yet. It was a Sunday morning. And I look in driveways, and I see newspapers, big fat newspapers, rolled in Sunday funnies. I see local paper like the Marin Journal going out of business, the San Francisco Chronicle going out of business. They're still printing newspapers with comic strips in 2008. And I say, who reads this stuff? What adult has the time or the inclination to read a comic strip in 2008? Why are they still printing color comic strips on Sunday newspapers? And this goes to the whole reason newspapers are going out of business. The people in the news business have no idea what they're doing, nor do they care. They're like the bicyclists I told you about earlier. All they care about is having fun, having a good time. Everything's an iPod. They still think they're in college. So I have the article up from the editor and publisher on my website, and here it reads. In just 6 months, five of the nation's top 25 newspapers have lost more than 10% of their subscribers. Another 11 have lost more than 5%. Here in my hometown of San Francisco, the Sad Chronicle, which was once a fine newspaper, not a great one, but a fine, it was a good paper when I moved here in the 70s, but it fell into the hands of radicals of the type that would support Obama blindly without looking at his policies. And these radical morons have run the Chronicle down in the last 6 months by 7%. So right here in San Francisco, for example, they have a circulation of 339,000. That's all they have left. Can you believe that the USA – let's go to another, a big one. Here's one, L.A. Times. L.A. Times lost 5% of its circulation in the last 6 months. It's down to 739,000 copies distributed a day. I don't know if that many are read. They're distributed. New York Post down 6% to 625,000. Daily News, New York, down 7% to 632,000. You know, I have a listenership that's estimated to be 8 to 10 million listeners a week on the Savage Nation. Sometimes I don't even realize that my circulation on a daily basis is larger, for example, or almost equal to that of the New York Times. If they're doing 1 million people a day, well, guess what? I have a larger readership or listenership than the New York Times. My listenership is certainly larger than my hometown newspaper. Now, you have to ask yourself, why is there a meltdown in the newspaper business? Well, there are many reasons, and we all know about the advertising. But remember, you know that to be the reason only because those in the newspaper business are feeding you that is the reason they're going out of business. That's one of the reasons newspapers are in decline, but it's not the only reason. The main reason newspapers are losing readers in droves is because of their far-left socialist news articles. Every other article is gay or lesbian. Every other article is about the myth of global warming. Every other article is about the evils of the businessman. And of course, every newspaper every day has shown the famous Reuters picture of Obama with a halo. People said, take this paper and shove it. I'm not paying for this rubbish. So you'd think that the owners, who are arch capitalists, would go into the newsroom with their sleeves rolled up and fire these jerks. But they don't, or they can't. Or is it that the J schools are so awful that there's nobody to replace the morons who are running their papers into the garbage can? The J schools are filled with left-wing activists who have brainwashed kids for 30 years. So the only kids who get into J school and come out of J school are brainwashed zombies who would think that Obama is a messiah. And that's why the newspapers are dying, along with a decline in advertising revenue, certainly. But how do you explain the fact that my audience is growing? How do you explain that? You don't want to accept it, and you don't read it in your local paper. But make no mistake about it, my show is growing. My show is bigger than ever. I'm still here. I've been attacked by three or four major organizations and groups in the last year, all under false pretenses. All by lies put into their heads by George Soros, in my opinion, by Media Matters, which was created by Hillary Clinton to drive conservatives out of the radio business. But I'm still here, and the newspapers are not still there. Most of their writers are in the cafe, plotting the revolution.
Savage.
For 20 years, Barack Obama followed a preacher of hate and said nothing as right raged against our country.
Not God bless America, God America.
U.S. of KKKA.
He built his power base in Wright's church. Wright was his mentor, advisor, and close friend. For 20 years, Obama never complained until he ran for president. Barack Obama, too radical, too risky.
So starting to fight. And fight back in the right way. Now, I want to go to a monologue I wrote earlier today that I was going to read at the top of the first hour that I haven't gotten to, but it fits right here, and I'm going to read it to you. And it says, will we have war this week? And it goes like this. It's very interesting that this very week over the weekend, U.S. Special Forces landed in Syria, invaded a terrorist training camp at a farm, and killed several terrorists. The very same weekend, we learned that Ahmadinejad of Iran has fallen ill from so-called exhaustion. Well, let me tell you something. Such exhaustion doesn't occur in dictatorships. What happened here, in my opinion, is that Iran has been signaled that we're about to attack this week, or that Israel is about to attack this week, and Iran is terrified. They want to shut this loudmouth crazy man up who has threatened Israel with extinction and threatened the West and insulted the West repeatedly. They understand that Ahmadinejad can bring ruin to their country. Iran knows that this is a very tight election. They also know that the Republicans are backed against the wall with a bad economy and they're behind in the polls. They also know we are a very dangerous enemy when provoked and pushed into a corner. So what, in essence, the Iranians have done is signal, we'll remove Ahmadinejad if you don't attack us. Coupled with the invasion of Syria, this is going to be reminiscent of Remember the Maine, which triggered off the Spanish-American War. It turned out later that we actually sank the Maine in Havana Harbor in order to justify a war. There's no question in my mind that this is an international provocation on our part, and rightly so. It's about time we've reacted to these bastards who have been threatening not only our security, but the security of our ally Israel. Therefore, I conclude the likelihood is 50-50 that we will go to war this week. Now remember, although to the intelligentsia this will be seen clearly as a ploy to get McCain elected, the intelligentsia has never determined the outcome of an election in this country. The people themselves will make the determination, and they're emotional, and can easily react to an emotional situation. That emotional situation is war. Remember Reagan launching F-15s at Gaddafi and what it did for his poll ratings. Should there be any kind of military action, there's no question in my mind that this country will rally behind the U.S. military and John McCain wins the election. Why? Simple. He's a war hero who flew fighter jets in Vietnam and was tortured for 5 years by our enemy. McCain can stand up there as the true hero that he is, and B.O. will look like what he is, a naked Marxist community organizer who hates his fellow countrymen's freedoms. This is Michael Savage. Will we have war this week? 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com, website, Psychological Nudity, the book. Let us go to the callers. Steve in San Francisco, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael?
Yes, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think that a lot of what's happening here is being driven by the fact that you've been marginalized and disregarded by the McCain campaign and by all the pundits, and though you say you don't care if they disregard you, et cetera, you're dying for their
What does it have to do with me? Let's talk about the election. Forget me for the minute. I'm not running for office.
Behind the Obama piece. In other words, you're disregarded. You're relegated as a hater and an entertainer.
Again, Steve, I know you're gay. I know you hate me because you're a psychopath. Not all gays are psychos, but you are. I recognize you. The fact of the matter is I did not say that the Constitution has failed us. I did not write that the civil rights movement was not complete enough in redistributing change, meaning taking people's money and giving it away to others. Obama did. You can't change the facts of that, Steve, no matter how you try.
but you've been marginalized and you're...
Oh, stop repeating the big lie. I'm a wealthy man. I've done very well for myself, Steve. You're a loser somewhere in a hovel on Castro Street who people probably reject right in your own community. You know what? Take a walk. Don't ever call the show. Your stupidity, you know, just bores me. Now, what do you want to talk about here? Who's next? Looking at the mouse. And blah, blah, blah. All right, Victorville, California. Stephanie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's such an honor. I laugh when you get mad. I love it because I'm mad.
I didn't get mad. I don't have patience for a guy like him, a little man in a dirty room somewhere who sits there, repeats himself, and thinks he's brilliant. No one ever heard of him. No one ever will. He'll die and be buried in Potter's Field with no one next to him. What do I care what this driveling moron says?
I don't think anybody cares.
Okay.
Anyway, I have a small business, a family business, and we do over $250,000 a year. And I cannot afford for BO to be president. I mean, you know, he's going to force us to, you know, provide health care. It's something we would like to do anyway, but we can't even afford it for ourselves. And pay higher taxes, that can break us with all the expenses.
So what would you do if you're a business that's struggling and he hits you with more tax? Like, for example, here in California, anyone making over a certain amount of money pays 10.5% of the gross in state income tax. Now, Stephanie, do you realize that there are states that have no income tax? Washington State, Nevada, Florida, and a few others, Wyoming, zero state income tax. How high do you think state income tax has to go before people who earn a living and build businesses will leave California en masse? Just get out of here. They'll lose 40 to 50,000 of the top wage earners. Who is going to create the businesses? The illegal aliens?
It's been so hard. It's been very hard. And we, you know, it's tax.
How many taquerias and Western Union stands can you have in a state? Don't these idiots in state government understand they're going to drive the people with money out of the state?
I had to worry about it. They've never had.
I understand. I hear you. I don't think the listeners can hear me anymore because of the time delay. I mean, something's like warped here. You got to let them hear me, guys. Hello. They're not hearing me. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. Now, let me have a little pleasure. Again, they still print Sunday comic strips. I cannot believe it. I don't know anyone who reads the comic strips, yet the morons in the news business still print expensive color comic strips. Certainly they can get rid of that. They can shed the comic strip. But no, the San Francisco Chronicle, which caters almost exclusively to a socialist, gay, and lesbian audience, who probably doesn't even buy the paper, by the way, and a bunch of old liberals in Marin County and surrounding areas, is going out of business. Here you have a Hearst newspaper that allegedly was losing $1 million a day. So they finally fire Sharon Stone's ex-housemate, Phil Bronstein. And he writes some pathetic blog that nobody reads. And this was the man who was running the paper for all these years. He'd be real jealous if he could have a radio show like mine. He'd be real happy rather to have a radio show like mine. But he can't. He cannot grip. He cannot motivate an audience as I can. You know, it has something to do with my political orientation, I will admit. I admit that. I am a conservative. I am a clear conservative. For example, in California, the single most important life-changing election is occurring. Not only for Obama versus McCain, the state will go to Obama because it's left of center, but on the issue of homosexual marriage, which, of course, as you well know, is a mockery of marriage, there is a proposition called Proposition 8. Millions upon millions of dollars have been spent by the homosexual lobbies to confuse people into voting against the interests of their own children. And they call it human rights and they call it equality. Nothing could be further from the truth. True equality does not attack families. True equality does not twist children's minds. True equality does not require that. A certain agenda requires that. And yet here in the state of California, Moonbeam, the former governor of the state of California, now the attorney general who will run for the governorship again, none other than Moonbeam Brown, Jerry Brown, who I thought had changed his politics and moved to the center. Moonbeam, the far-left radical ex-governor of the state, Moonbeam Brown, changed the language of Proposition 8 to confuse the voter. Read it. Attorney General twists language to undermine gay marriage ban. It's on michaelsavage.com. And it is pathetic to believe that I gave money to the Jerry Brown campaign. I'll never give him another dime. Because once a moonbeam, always a moonbeam. and I don't want to vote for a moonbeam again. I want someone who supports families. I will not support a man who still pushes the global warming agenda while most intelligent people have abandoned it because they know that global warming is a fantasy and a fiction of Al Gore and his extremist wackos. That's why it's not even a campaign issue anymore. Ask yourself, why was it not a campaign issue? Because it always was a fake issue. It was drummed up by a bunch of charlatans. But this guy, the Attorney General Moonbeam Brown, continues to push global warming. Now he rewrites the ban on homosexual marriages in a way to make most people confused because he's in the pocket of the homosexual agenda again. And so, therefore, once a moonbeam, always a moonbeam. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. As you well know, over the weekend, a judge has tossed out the lawsuit challenging Obama's citizenship. The judge didn't say that he knows that Obama's a U.S. citizen. He just said that the citizen had no right to bring the lawsuit. And then, of course, we were shocked to learn that the so-called Republican governor of Hawaii, Miss Pingle or whatever, I don't know her name, also said you can't see Obama's birth certificate. This is all after he visited his ailing grandmother. Shockingly, at the end of a campaign, goes and diverts to Hawaii, visits the grandmother, and then we can't see the birth certificate. How could something as basic as whether or not he's an American citizen not be of any interest to anyone in the media? Well, the answer is that's why they still print Sunday comic strips. That's why USA Today is down. That's why the New York Times is down 4%, LA Times 5%, Daily News New York 7%. The Washington Post down 2%, the Chicago Tribune 7%, Houston Chronicle 11%, Newsday down 3%, Arizona Republic down 5%, the San Francisco Comical down 7%, Dallas Morning News down 9%, Boston Globe down 10%. I can go on the list, Star Ledger Newark, New Jersey down 10%, Plain Dealer Cleveland 9%, Philadelphia Inquirer 11%, Detroit Free Press 6.84%, Oregonian 8%, Atlanta Journal-Constitution 13% decline in circulation, and these are all over the last 6 months. Why? Because in the last 6 months, the Obamania of the journalism school lunatics got out of control, and the readers have had enough of it. They won't buy the papers if they continue to put out this college-level adulation of Obama without any serious journalism. They're going to say the circulation's down because of advertising revenue, which is certainly a part of it, but not the whole truth. The whole truth is what I tell you. They give you the partial truth, but as you well know, a half-truth is worse than a lie in most cases. So when you get to Obama and you hear his half-truths, you don't understand it's worse than a lie. The man is a naked socialist if you listen to his policies. The man is not only a naked socialist, he is an overt Marxist, if he still believes what he said in interviews in 2001, in one of them with Chicago Radio. Could you try to play clip 5? Now, it's hard to hear, but it may be worth trying. Play it. Oh,
I think we could say that the Constitution reflected a enormous blind spot in this culture that carries on until this day, and that the framers had that same blind spot. I don't think the two views are contradictory to say that it was a remarkable political document that paved the way for where we are now, and to say that it also reflected the fundamental flaw of this country that continues to this day.
Here you have a man, Barack Hussein Obama, who just said that the U.S. Constitution reflects an enormous blind spot of the Founding Fathers, and that the U.S. Constitution itself reflects the fundamental flaw of this country that continues to this day. If that is not overt revolutionary Marxism, I'd like to know what is. The man has just revealed himself to be a revolutionary Marxist, and I believe that he has an obligation to repudiate these remarks. The problem is twofold. We have a juvenile press corps that has been brainwashed in and out of J school who will not do this. We have a press corps that flies with him that is not allowed to ask him any questions. We have a press corps that when it does ask a question, even of the loudmouth Biden, as that brave woman did, he attacks, and she is attacked for asking real questions. we have the perfect storm where a Marxist may become the first time we may have a Marxist for the presidency. Now, you can brush it off and think you're clever in doing so, but I warn all of you good liberals that you will not benefit from a Marxist regime like this. You may think you will. You may hate John McCain because it reflects the Bush years, but be very careful what you wish for, because it will hurt you as well. Now, you may say, well, I'm all in favor of silencing conservatives and talk radio. Well, when they came for Michael Savage, you did not raise your voice. In fact, you cheered. And then when they came for Rush Limbaugh, you didn't raise your voice in protest. You cheered. But when they came for some of the critics on NPR who started to say, but wait a minute, this isn't the change we asked for. You've gone too far. You've turned this into a socialist nation. Well, when they took them away, there was no one left to raise their voices in protest, was there? So beware what I am telling you. Listen to what I'm telling you, rather. Watch out for this guy, Obama. These tapes are his voice. He has ripped the Constitution. He's ripped the Founding Fathers. He says that the very Constitution, which has gotten him this far, was good to get him this far. But the Constitution reflects the fundamental flaw of this country that continues to this day. So he wants to rewrite the Constitution. This guy, this egomaniac, this narcissistic lunatic, let me say it like it is. I think Obama is a dangerously deluded candidate. I think he is dangerously deluded because people have kissed his behind for his entire life. Being multiracial in Hawaii, the white liberals, and I know them, I remember them, the white liberals got on their hands and knees in front of him, and whatever he said, they agreed with. No one has ever challenged this man his entire life. He sounds like an overly well-read student who was brainwashed by his professors, first at Punahou, and then later on at Yale. His friends were all radicals. They were all Marxists. His preacher is a dangerous anti-white, anti-American preacher. How much more do you need to know? Oh, I know. McCain is not a sterling candidate. I agree with you. McCain is pathetic. I have to agree. But let me tell you something. I'll take a pathetic Bush 3 over a Marx 2. I have said that before. I intended not to endorse anyone for this election prior to this week. But the more I have learned about Obama, the more I realize I cannot sit on the sidelines. And so I have to officially say, and sadly so, that I am going to endorse John McCain for whatever it's worth. You may say, oh, who listens to that guy, Savage? What does an endorsement from him mean? It means more than you may imagine. It means much more than you may imagine. An endorsement from Michael Savage means more than an endorsement from Newsday, the Chicago Tribune, the New York Post, the Daily News, the Los Angeles Times, the Star Ledger, the Plain Dealer, the Detroit Free Press, the Oregonian, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the San Diego Union-Tribune, the Sacramento Bee. Michael Savage's daily circulation is larger than any one of these newspapers. I have millions of listeners, most of whom, by the way, are independents. In case you don't know it, they're not all conservative. Most of my audience are independents, and they've been waiting for some kind of signal as to which way to go. They despise what Bush has done to this country as much as you do, as much as I do. And I've said so. I've been the harshest critic of Bush imaginable. And I understand that John McCain is really not that much different in so many ways that it's very hard to endorse him. I don't care whether he comes on this show or not. It wouldn't do a thing for my ratings. Remember, what is a rating in radio? A one-show rating jump means nothing. This is a grueling, grueling long-term business. It occurs over a long, long period of time. So a spike in a listenership for a day means next to nothing. He's been on shows that aren't one-tenth the size of mine, and no one knows who these shows are. And I have to put my own ego aside, and I have to say what's best for America. I'll take my chances with the old warhorse and even Sarah Palin, who I'm not a big fan of, by the way, over this naked Marxist revolutionary, because I don't want to see what the next Pol Pot's liable to do to the world. And I don't like the people around Obama. They don't frighten me. I detest them. They represent everything bad in America.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Look at the victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court. I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights, but the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And to that extent, as radical as I think people tried to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical.
Now, the Warren Court, in case you don't know, it almost destroyed America. The Earl Warren Court was as close to a socialist Supreme Court as we've ever had, if not an outright one. It almost destroyed this country through the imbalance of its thinking, which was clearly Marxist and redistributive. The fact of the matter is, he said it didn't go far enough. In another interview, it turns out that Obama said, and no one's invented this, that the U.S. Constitution itself reflects an enormous blind spot of the Founding Fathers. This spoiled brat, Obama, has the nerve to say that the U.S. Constitution is a remarkable political document, but it reflected the fundamental flaw of this country that continues to this day. Here is an upstart from Hawaii who was catered to his entire life, a spoiled brat. Let's call it like it is. He sounds like a spoiled brat. He talks like a spoiled brat. And he says there he knows more than the Founding Fathers, and he'd like to rewrite the U.S. Constitution. Do you have any idea the danger we are in? Now, you ask yourself, how did he get so far? There are many answers to it. We have an entirely brainwashed youth in this country that has been given over to impulse only, impulse only, impulse and looks only. They don't give a rat's behind about the U.S. Constitution. They don't recognize that their own freedom to pursue their orgiastic lifestyles is built upon the U.S. Constitution. They could care less about the U.S. Constitution and the Founding Fathers. They think it's a given that every country on earth has these rights and will always have these rights. They don't know anything about Karl Marx. They don't know about the prison camps in the Soviet Union. They don't know about Pol Pot's 2 million human skulls of people who wore eyeglasses. They don't understand that Hitler was a socialist, because they have been brainwashed by our state-run schools and the unions, which you well know are all far to the left. I believe that the press itself is now embarrassed. I believe that there are some in the mainstream media who are waking up to the fact that they paid almost no attention to Obama and what he stands for, because they were so focused on Hillary Clinton and so focused on attacking Mitt Romney that they didn't look at this candidate called Obama. Now they're pretending to look at him, but they're not going to succeed in looking into his birth. They're not going to succeed in looking at some other things that have popped up that are very embarrassing for their chosen one. For example, the LA Times has a videotape of Obama saluting an ex-PLO operative and attacking Jews. If the Jewish people of this country knew that, would they be showering money upon Obama? I don't know. Maybe they're suicidal. Maybe liberal Jews are suicidal, and I don't know that. How about the fact that Obama has been found to have said, as I just played for you, the fact that the founders were wrong, the Constitution needs to be changed, that the civil rights era wasn't radical enough because it didn't address redistribution of wealth? Do the young children in this country, meaning the 18-year-olds who can vote through the 25-year-olds who can vote, understand what that means? Do they have any idea what that really means? Do you think that they would usher in a socialist revolution in America if they knew? They might. For all I know, they may want a socialist revolution in America. They may want re-education camps. They may want execution squads as long as they don't have to see it. I don't know what the youth of this country wants. When I see these orgiastic monsters dancing and partying and pointy shoes and worrying about their next orgasm and how they look, what I see are a fascistic youth. I see a youth that would go for anything so long as they could party on. I see a youth without a conscience. I see a youth without a soul. I see a youth without a country. I see a youth without religion. I see a youth without a self. All I see are a mass, a giant mass of confused children who have been brainwashed into not understanding the danger they are in. This is the Savage Nation. Eugene, Oregon, Mel, you're on the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hey, I've got an analogy for you. I love your Louie and the Monkey, but I think it's analogous to something else. And I see this in that people go by monkeys. They think they're cute. They think they're domesticatable. They think they're adoptable. And they don't realize that monkeys are by nature kind of wild and definitely unpredictable.
So you're going to now go to the fact that socialism is the monkey, correct?
I am afraid so. I see our country as Louie.
Our country is Louie, and socialism is the monkey. And they don't understand that once they put the monkey on their back, it's very hard to get it off your back unless you throw it out the window. Mel, you're winning a free copy of Psychological Nudity as your Christmas present. It's an early Christmas present because the books are going to probably be gone by Thanksgiving, and you can send it to your favorite friend. It'll be on your way very shortly. It can be bought only at michaelsavage.com. I had done an earlier interview on probably one of the elements of the perfect storm that may elect Obama. I hope he doesn't get elected because I don't want to see a socialist revolution in the country because I would not work. If any more killer taxes were imposed upon me personally, I would not work. I would simply quit working and let the poor take care of themselves. And there are millions like me. Remember that. They would shut down their businesses rather than be legislated out of business. And the fact of the matter is, if they want to redistribute wealth and they want to raise taxes, millions of people like me would stop working. And you say, well, that's for the good? No. Well, it isn't for the good. If jobs get lost and wealth is not created and businesses are not created, you're going to find out that just like the newspaper boys and girls who are sitting in cafes collecting their unemployment benefits for 13 weeks, you're going to wind up sitting in a cafe as the out-of-work intelligentsia looking for your next job. And who's going to create that job for you? Who is going to save the money? Who is going to build that business other than a capitalist? So think very carefully as to what you want, because you may just get it and you won't benefit. I'll be right back. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be absolutely nowhere.
Savage.
Everyone says that this current economic meltdown is worse than we've seen in generations. Well, they say it. Housing, banks, and now credit have taken their losses. And so the rest of the world is apparently feeling it. Well, what must be done is the question, other than throwing money at the guys on Wall Street. Our next guest, Harry Dent, not only predicted the boom of the 90s, but he predicted this crash as well. Harry Dent, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
You say that this current crisis is a result of the building of the perfect storm.
Yeah, you know, we've been predicting for 20 years, back to our earliest books in the late 80s, that this baby boom generation would drive our economy higher and higher as they moved into their predictable peak in spending and income and productivity around the end of this decade, and then we would see a long-term downturn. So that's cycle number one. Every 40 years, our economy and stock markets peak and don't return to those levels for a long time. 1929 was such a peak, 1968. Now we're talking about presently. So this is not just another correction. It's not just another slowdown in housing. This is a long-term downturn and crisis, not a short-term one. Now, the second cycle that's important is that we see commodity prices peak on a different clock, about every 30 years, 1920, 1951, 1980, and now we're due around late 2009, early 2010. Some commodity prices may have already peaked, but this is a rare, like you say, perfect storm where both of these major cycles are peaking at the same time. We have not seen this in our lifetimes. So we're going to see, you know, this combination of, gosh, inflation and commodity prices. On the other hand, we've got failing housing prices after a generation has peaked in their long boom in housing. And that backs up on the banking system. And that says ultimately we are going to get a deflation cycle, much like the early 30s. And most of us don't understand that because we haven't seen it in our lifetime.
What was different in the 30s as compared to now?
Well, you know, unlike today, the government did not respond so strongly at first, and that's why we think we're going to get a rebound in 2009, which is good news for a lot of people for getting out of real estate that they're trapped in or getting out of stocks at higher levels. So that's the difference. The government did not stimulate the economy so strongly at first. Most of the stimulus came in the New Deal when Roosevelt got in office in 1933, after the, you know, worst of unemployment and the worst of the stock crash was over. So again, we'll probably downturns. We get this first crash and downturn. The government stimulates strongly to prevent it. We get a rebound. The problem here is because of this commodity and oil cycle we're talking about, if the government is successful in stimulating the economy and creating a rebound, we're going to see inflation pressures. We're going to see mortgage and interest rates go up very sharply next year, and oil and commodity prices rebound, and that's all going to kill a recovery and put us into a deeper downturn, likely late 2009 to 2010. So we don't see any way out of this. Like in the 30s, once you get bubbles of this magnitude in stocks and real estate and things, they have to deflate. The next generation will not be able to afford the standard of living we have if things don't come down, particularly house prices and stuff. So this is really a good thing. It's going to be very painful. It's going to take a number of years to work out, probably until 2012 approximately. But it's going to lower the price of housing, lower interest rates and mortgage rates, and lower the general cost of living. It's going to be a big win for the new generation coming up. The problem is a lot of us baby boomers own a lot of these inflated assets, and that's what we have to protect ourselves against in the next year as we get this likely rebound from the stimulus plan.
So how are people supposed to thrive in this economy?
Well, you know, real estate is really the biggest difficulty for the banking system, the economy, and our long-term analysis shows that real estate's going to have to go down more like 50% to get back to where it needs to be rather than just maybe, say, the 20% we've seen or 10% in other areas. So you have to get rid of unnecessary real estate. If you're moving, rent. You know, if you've got kids that are looking to buy their first house, tell them to wait a few years. If you're buying a car, lease it. Don't purchase it because it's likely to go down. You know, you can refinance your mortgages now if you're going to keep your real estate so that you lock in low interest rates now and look to convert to much lower rates around 2012 or so. The biggest thing is to sell all unnecessary assets. Sell stocks, not now, not in this recent downturn. Wait for a rebound into 2009. Again, we'd like to see the Dow get back as high as 12, maybe 13,000. If we see those levels, sell your stocks, get liquid. The people with cash, the people that keep their jobs and have cash flow and the businesses with strong cash flow, and the people with good credit will come out big winners. I mean, this is going to be the greatest sale on financial assets that you will see in your entire lifetime. These type of depressions and deleveraging processes only happen once in a lifetime. So it's a huge opportunity for the people who see it coming. The people who are hold on to these assets, real estate and stocks and even commodities, are going to lose big time, unfortunately.
Well, the bailout seems like it's not doing anything, or it's a temporary fix at best. What do you think needs to be done?
You know, I think it is temporary. You're right about that, Mike. You know, this just kind of puts a Band-Aid on the thing, keeps the economy from failing too rapidly. We see two scenarios, that the government stimulus plan is not enough because the banking deleveraging is so severe and we go into a deeper downturn next year anyway. The other scenario is they are successful and we bounce, but we get this huge inflation surge. And how can the government keep reflating the economy when inflation becomes the problem and rising interest rates are killing the housing market and et cetera? So we don't see any way out of it, but it's true. If you look back in history, the best solution long term is what happened in the 1930s. The government decided to make major investments in infrastructures, things that will pay off long term, you know, roads and water systems and sewer systems and all those type of things, green technologies, alternative energy. These are the types of things we will come out of this long term with the next generation, et cetera. But That's the type of thing that'll pay off. If you just give people unemployment and you just throw money into the system, it is a short-term fix, and it just creates debt and taxpayer liabilities that don't pay off. So I think that's what'll happen as we get deeper in this crisis. The politicians will come to the conclusion that, yes, we need to invest in infrastructures, and if we're going to continue to get support from countries around the world like China that hold a lot of our dollars in bonds, they're going to want to see that we're doing things long-term and not just short-term Band-Aid to keep supporting us. And we're going to need their support. We are going to need the support of the trade surplus nations from everywhere, from China and Asia to the Middle East.
What factors cause this?
Well, you know, what we say, and again, this is why we've been predicting this for 20 years based on demographics, people earn and spend money, peak age 46 to 50 in their spending, peak in their house buying in their early 40s. That's why this housing slowdown has come first, and we forecast that years ago. What happens is that we would have this downturn even if we didn't have this subprime crisis and all these, you know, mortgage securities that are bad and these credit debt swaps that are really a bunch of baloney. Everybody's insuring each other, so when everybody goes down, nobody's really insured. We'd have this crisis anyway. These things are just typical top of the boom. People think things are never going to go down. Real estate will never go down, and people just leverage more and take more risk. I mean, consumers have done this, the banks have done it, and the government was lax on regulations. So we're really all to blame for this. So this would happen anyway, but this subprime crisis does make it worse and is causing a lot of trouble right now, and that's why the government's responding so strongly. So, you know, again, there's really no way out of it. And we look in our new book, The Great Depression Ahead, we look at past scenarios, and you'll see that, you know, it is good long term that the greatest times of mass prosperity in history came in the 40s and 50s and 60s after this kind of shakeout period we call the Great Depression. Bringing these bubbles back down, the bubbles help create a lot of innovation and finance a lot of entrepreneurial pursuits, but it makes the rich rich. What happens when we get this deflation process, after you get over the unemployment and the shocks, it's the everyday household who sees their cost of living and products to them go down significantly and benefits. And actually, from the 40s on, the everyday household gained much faster than the rich. So we're going to see some very big changes come out of this. We're just warning people in this book, you got to prepare in 2009. We're likely to get this bounce. You've got to take this seriously. We've been warning about this for 20 years, but a lot of people say, oh, that won't happen. Now you can see banks and insurance companies are failing. This is the beginning of the next depression.
Harry Dent, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was a great interview. Thanks for having me on.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'll tell you, if I were to invest in a new business, it would be building gates. I think the gate business is going to be a great business after an Obama victory. Anyone who builds like gates that keep out, people who ring your bell. But I'm getting a lot of emails now. Michael, it may be, I just got an email from a friend of mine. I'm not going to read the name of the individual because I'm sure he wants privacy. It says, your nationwide announcement a few minutes ago may save the McCain campaign and may save America. I mean it, Michael. If he pulls it out, it will be because of your endorsement, and you will have saved America. God bless you, MD. Well, I'm getting them now by the flood. A lot of people are excited that I endorsed John McCain, and I don't expect anything in return from McCain. In fact, I wouldn't want it. The fact of the matter is I'm not a politician. And I believe that although McCain has been incompetent, I think his campaign is horrendous. I don't think he has separated himself sufficiently from this Republican machine to warrant much excitement. Nevertheless, when compared with not a Democrat, we are not talking about just a Democrat candidate. We are talking about a naked Marxist. I don't give a rat's behind what the media wants you to believe. I believe what I hear. And when I hear Obama saying that the civil rights era didn't go far enough because it didn't address redistribution of wealth, when I hear him say that the Warren Court was not radical enough, when I hear him say that the blind spot of the Constitution needs to be corrected, and the founders had a blind spot. I am telling you, this is naked Marxism. It is not even socialism. You have to understand something. there's an entire spectrum of the left wing. There's an entire spectrum of the right wing. We know what the extremes are on the right because the media has educated you well enough to understand what that may be. But are you aware of the fact that there's an extremist element of the left wing? That a benign liberal like yourself may not represent the entire left wing? Are you aware that there are very dangerous people on the extremities of the left wing and that they are represented by Barack Hussein Obama and his friends? Don't you get it? Don't you understand he's not a Democrat? He's not a liberal. He's an outright communist, Marxist, whatever you want to call it. Why do I say this? Listen to his words. Listen to his words again in clip one. Play it again, Sam.
The victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court. I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights, but the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And to that extent, as radical as I think people tried to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical.
Now, I don't think you understand this. The Earl Warren Court was the most socialist-oriented court this country has ever seen. It almost destroyed America. It paved the way for the Black Panthers. It paved the way for the entire cabal of left-wing radicals who were shooting police and blowing things up in this country. And they are Obama's friends. He sat in a church for 20 years where Reverend Wright put down whites and put down America and called this country every name under the sun. You're telling me that's just an opinion? Well, it is an opinion, but I don't happen to agree that this is the KKK of America. In fact, it's the opposite. That's how a charlatan like Obama could get this far. The dignity of America is represented in the fact that a harlequin like Obama could get this far. If this were truly a racist nation, how could a man like him get to this point? Do you understand what I just said to you? But to the revolutionary who is confusing you, what they're saying is, well, just because he got this far doesn't mean you're not really a racist deep down because you're not going to vote for him. Who says I have to vote for him just because he's half black? Where's it written that I have to vote for somebody based on their race? So they're manipulating you because they're masters of deceit. They're masters of manipulation. The problem is, we have a man who's inarticulate running on the other side. And I have to describe again about poor John McCain, even though I've endorsed him. I got to explain to you again why you keep wanting something from him he cannot give you. It's not that he's old. The guts were taken out of him by the Vietnamese sadists. I want you to imagine flying at 35, 40,000 feet or 20,000 feet in, I think he was flying F-4 Phantoms, and then suddenly being shot down by a rocket, bailing out of a plane, landing, having your legs broken and a shoulder broken, then having the enemy stab you with a bayonet in the leg, being taken to a prison hospital and tormented for days before a cast is put on your leg, and then tortured for 5 straight years and not giving up what they wanted him to give up, which was to say things against his own country. He's a certifiable hero. But now I want you to try to put yourself in that man's position, John McCain. Every time the Vietnamese sadists said, sign this and we'll release you, you'll be home soon to your wife and family and your father. And he said no, they beat him on his cast, causing him immense pain, shocks of pain that you probably can't imagine. And so John McCain has been Pavlovian conditioned to understand that every time he fights against somebody verbally and strongly, he gets pain. That's how he became the person that he is, the compromiser. Don't you understand that he stopped fighting with Kennedy and he signed the McCain-Kennedy immigration reform bill because he couldn't take the pain of the torture of Kennedy tormenting him verbally or abusing him verbally or threatening him verbally. Whatever it is, John McCain was Pavlovian conditioned in the communist prison camp in Hanoi by his tormentors to understand that every time he verbally fought with someone, he received terrible pain. That is why he's been too nice to Obama. That is why he won't run with the birth certificate questions. That is why he won't run with the other questions that are surrounding this harlequin, Obama. But nevertheless, we have to take this old war horse or the country is doomed. Make no mistake about it. The country will be doomed. We have never experimented with a socialist government in this country. We've come close. very close indeed. But we've never embraced socialism, as have the Europeans. That is why the Europeans are excited by Obama. He's their kind of guy. He's a socialist. And you understand that they want a socialist America to be wrapped into the new worldwide socialist governments, the new worldwide socialism that is emerging all over the globe. And make no mistake about it, the Soviet Union hasn't gone away. In fact, the Soviet Union is coming back. It's being reformed by Putin. And so we are an impediment to the worldwide socialist revolution. And they're so close they can smell it. They're so close they could cry. They're so close they could scream. They've never had it so close they almost have the White House. The only thing standing between them and the White House are you. You, the independents who listen to this program. You can save America. Now, I recognize that I got George Bush elected in 2000. I got George Bush elected in 2004. And I did so almost the very same way I am now endorsing John McCain. I don't care whether or not the media recognizes the power of this audience. But you understand your power. Millions of you understand the power of the ballot box. After all, you stopped George Bush in his attempt to sell us out to the Dubai ports folks. Do you remember that one? It was you who stopped him. It was you who stopped George Bush cold in the sellout of America. I mean, it's bad enough what he's done since then. But it hasn't been as bad as it could have been had you not stood up and stopped him. We had other victories along the way. And in December, I'll read back on what we did over these years of this terrible, terrible administration. So I recognize the power of the media. I recognize the power of the savage nation. And I don't need the support of the local newspaper to know the power of the audience. This audience dwarfs the readership of any local newspaper in America. It dwarfs the circulation of most of the national dailies, in case you don't know it. And I had the statistics. It's up on, here they are from editor and publisher, up on michaelsavage.com. And it's under the title, They Still Print Sunday Comic Strips. When you look at the circulation, for example, of the Los Angeles Times, and you realize that it's 739,000 a day, or the Daily News, 632,000 a day, or the Washington Post is 622,000 a day. Do you realize that my AQH, my average quarter hour listenership, is higher than any of these numbers? Now you say, that's amazing. Yes, I'm trying to tell you it's pretty amazing. I myself don't understand it. I don't understand my own power because I tend to come before the microphone every day as though I'm talking to a group of guys around a table in North Beach. I don't change myself for the show. Ask the people who really know me. Friday night was a hot night. After my show in San Francisco, I went up to an Italian restaurant, like North Beach Restaurant. I called a couple of friends. We sat outside a bottle of wine, which I rarely do, and ordered some appetizers. It was an extremely hot night. There wasn't a leaf stirring on any of the trees, nothing, which is very rare for San Francisco. I, as you know, do not like hot weather. I hate it. That's why I live in this area. I love the fog. I love the cold. I like the mystery of the fog. You know, if I wanted heat, I'd live in Mexico or I'd live in Los Angeles. I can't understand idiots who come here. Ooh, it's foggy. Ooh, what a wonderful hot day. I feel like saying, schmuck, if you love the heat, what are you doing here? Anyway, the point is, it was a very hot night. Not a tree was stirring. So my friend who owns the restaurant said, let's go for a walk in the park. We were joking. He said, it's very hot. He said, do you know that the last time it was this hot and this intensely hot at night was the night before the earthquake, the Loma Prieta earthquake of 1989. He said it was just a night just like this. I happen to know my friend. He planted a vineyard. I was there actually when he cleared the brush many years ago. You know, he bought land in Sonoma. Now he has a wine and he has olives. He is a man of the earth. He understands the earth and he understands things that the average person who doesn't know the earth can't understand. The next day, 3 a.m, there was an earthquake. Now, it didn't wreck San Francisco, thank God, but there was a pretty serious earthquake running through one of the faults up through Ukiah. He felt it in his bones. Well, just as he can read the signs of the earth, I can read the political signs as clearly, if not clearly, than anybody in the United States of America. And I am telling you that if the Obama Marxist campaign is not stopped, you are committing your children to a lifetime of servitude. This is Michael Savage, and I agree with my monologue, and I'll be right back. Savage. Turn off the music. Let me hear some real heavy metal. This is too, it sounds like a Republican heavy metal. That's heavy metal. Guys, you still have it. The other thing is like bland, like elevator metal, you know. Make believe you're a mechanic working in a garage and you're ready to break something. You can't take it anymore. You see all these interlopers, phonies, and communists everywhere you turn. Think of that kind of music. Oh, am I back in the air? Oh, I was just thinking out loud. Can't believe it. Turn it on. Can't believe the power of talk radio. No wonder Nancy Pelosi wants to turn the station off. No wonder they make things up about me. I mean, if you owned a newspaper that was friendly to the communist, socialist, Marxist, gangster regimes around America, both sides of the aisle, and they were friendly to you, and you give them access, and then suddenly you have these renegades out there called talk show hosts who actually tell the truth, of course you'd want to turn them off, because you can't have the truth in a country like this. Why? Well, we need our truth. Izvestia. Or Pravda, meaning is the truth. That means the truth in Russian. Pravda, the truth. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth that the government wants you to hear. So when Obama is found to have said, redistribute the wealth in a tape, or Obama is found to have said that the founders had an enormous blind spot, or Obama is recorded as having said that the founding document calling the Constitution reflects the fundamental flaw of this country, they don't want you to hear any of that. No, they're real journalists. After all, they're real journalists. The whole truth and nothing but the truth that the Democrats tell them to project to you. Newspapers, they're in free fall. They still print Sunday comics. I can't believe I go for a walk 8 in the morning on a Sunday with my dog, which I rarely do. And I see big fat newspapers rolled up in a driveway waiting for the granola and whatever people are eating today. I guess they don't eat bacon and eggs anymore. But they're still, even though they don't eat bacon and eggs anymore, they're still consuming the mental equivalent of bacon and eggs, a comic strip with a newspaper. That's the mental equivalent of bacon and eggs. Now, I don't understand how people can stop eating bacon and eggs because they know it's bad for their coronary arteries, but they're still consuming comic strips and newspapers that are bad for their brain. See, this is what I'm trying to tell you. Well, the fact of the matter is many people have eschewed. They've eschewed the comic strip newspaper, and they're getting their news from other sources, mainly the internet and talk radio. And, of course, many of you in the internet business are Democrats, socialists, communists. You don't realize that if you let them legislate guys like me away, you're next. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? You may hate my politics, but you better support me, or you're going to be next. Because as sure as I'm sitting here, if you let Nancy Pelosi and her gang destroy talk radio, you're going to be next. They'll take down the internet. Don't you understand that? Don't you get it? San Francisco, KNEW. Bill, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. How are you? It's Bill. Yeah, man, I'm just so excited about your endorsement of KNEW. I just about jumped out of my truck. I've been waiting for your endorsement for months now. I've been listening to you every
Why do you care what I say since I'm so unimportant? I mean, you were going to vote for him anyway, right?
McCain?
Yeah.
I've been following this campaign from the very onset. I initially was for either of Mitt Romney or Thompson. Actually, I voted for Romney, if you want the truth about it. I voted for Romney in the primary. That didn't come true.
What does my endorsement have to do with you, though, if you've already voted?
Because you have a huge audience and a lot of conservative people out here like myself that love our country. That's why.
Well, that's right. So we have at the end of the day, we're going to be, unfortunately, having to vote for John McCain. And if there was another candidate, let's say a Democrat who was more moderate, I wouldn't endorse John McCain. I'd say, you know what, we'd be better off with a Democrat, and then we'll get a Republican who'll be more conservative. I go along with that philosophy. We are not going to have 4 years if we let this dangerous Marxist Obama win. It's as simple as that. There are too many questions surrounding this man's loyalty, surrounding this man's birth, surrounding this man's friends, surrounding this man's church. And I am not going to gamble with this country's future simply because John McCain is such a tepid candidate. I have to go with the guy. And then we have to start lobbying McCain, should he win, to become more of a conservative. That's the only choice we have right now. There's no other choice. Thank you for the call. So listen to me. I want you to listen carefully. Don't expect to read this on the blogs or on the internet, because they're my competitors. They're not my friends. And some of them are my enemies, not my friends. So what you got to do is just listen to me saying straight up from me, straight to you. They say that about 12% of the voters, the registered voters, are undecided. That's an enormous number, particularly since every election is like razor thin one way or the other. And so you can make that difference. I don't know what percent of that 12% listens to this show. I would think it's a large number. I don't have the data in front of me. But if you have 8 to 10 million listeners, you're the third largest talk show in America, and the show starts so late in the day on the East Coast and in the afternoon on the West Coast, you realize that it's a pretty big phenomenon to have an audience of this size, which is why the jealousy factor is so high amongst the failures in San Francisco who think themselves to be the enlightened ones and think that by electing a Marxist, this country is going to suddenly enter a new phase of nirvana. The fact of the matter is, I am telling you that I endorse McCain, and I'm telling you, you better vote for the old guy, because God in heaven, the center will not hold. We will have an extremist government unlike any you've ever seen in this country. You know, you see the press writing things like right wing or extreme right wing or right wing radio. When have you last seen anyone in the so-called media saying left wing or extremist left wing or left wing press or left wing this? You never see the word, do you? Do you ever see a reference to the words left wing in the media? No, that's them. Don't you get it? We're the alternative to that philosophy of socialism. We are the alternative to the philosophy of slavery. We are the proponents of freedom. We are the proponents of individualism. The left are proponents of groupthink and government control of the individual, the crushing of the individual. The crushing of the individual. Many things have been said about Michael Savage, but one thing you can be sure of, and that's this. I believe in individualism and individual rights. That's something you better remember, because it may become a distant figment of your imagination if the Marxist socialists win. They stand for government control of everything that you think, everything that you eat, everything that you drink, and everything that you do. I believe in individualism and liberty. I'm Michael Savage, and this is Psychological Nudity.